We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
I get a chance to sit down with one of my favorite teammates, a guy that showed me the ropes as I was coming up through the ranks at the Michigan football program. Jared Irons sits down with us today here on In the Trenches.
Let's go In the Trenches with John Jansen. The former Wolverines captain and Michigan Sports Hall of Famer will take you inside the locker room with players and coaches.
Jansen, I tell you what, buddy, I'm about to jump outside my chest right now, dude. Wait, you said that.
Let's go, man.
I'm like, wow.
Once again, here's John Jansen.
Welcome back, friends, and we'll get to Jared Irons, two-time captain, leading tackler at the University of Michigan, and his time here. We'll get to him in just a few minutes, but I want to get to 7 from 77 because the conversation I had with Jared, it's an emotional roller coaster. And it went for about 40 minutes, so I want to make sure that you have enough energy to make it through all 40 minutes of that conversation with Jared Irons. But before we get there, 7 from 77 and my partner, Brian Bush.
Yeah, John, I was worried you weren't going to get through that one based on some of the conversations you had at the end of it. So it's a doozy, dare I say, similar to a locker room speech, but the result of the game was well known.
It was, and I had a build up to it. I was ready for it, and I'll just give everybody a little bit of a teaser. When I was being recruited at the University of Michigan, there was a team that had wanted into the Big Ten, and there were a lot of concessions that were made. And when they came in, Jared Irons had a hand in making one of the most historical moments in Michigan football, and not just Michigan football, but Big Ten history. We get to that with that conversation. So I'm excited about it.
It is a doozy. All right, number one on 7 from 77, as we've done. How you holding up, man?
It's been good. It's every week we get a little bit of tidbit, of knowledge where we're like, you know what? Okay. I can see things starting to open back up. And all of us are wondering what happens with the fall sports schedule. And, you know, we had the NCAA, and I know we're going to get into it here in just a little bit, but hey, they said, hey, from June 1 to June 30, we're opening things up for, you know, organized team activities. Now we got to wait on local governments. We got to wait on the Big Ten. The SEC is going to vote on it today. So a lot of news coming out that we're going to get to. So in short, I'm excited. I'm encouraged that we will have a fall sports schedule.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm with you there. Number two, always a really neat day when we learn who the Hall of Honor inductees are at the University of Michigan. Six outstanding ones this go around: Sarah Kane of gymnastics, Kelly Gannon of field hockey, Jim Pachorik of baseball, Lexi Zimmerman of volleyball, and two football reps, Trip Wellborn and Ty Law. It's one heck of a class, John.
It is, and every it doesn't matter if it's a Hall of Fame, if it's a Hall of Honor, when you are recognized, especially at a program, an athletic program like the University of Michigan that has had world-class athletes for over, well over 100 years, and you are recognized as, you know, somebody that goes into, hey, you did something special here, you did something special beyond here, it's awesome. And I had a chance when my coach, Lloyd Carr, was inducted into the Hall of Honor to MC the event. And all of the preparation that goes into it, the it's a special night, and it is supposed to be special, made special for all of the inductees, and it's a night that they'll never forget, and it's a chance for them to, you know, to talk about and reflect upon their time in Ann Arbor, their time with their respective programs. It's a great honor, and my hat's off to all of those that are currently in the Hall of Honor and all of those that are going to be inducted this year.
All right, number three. We mentioned the big news coming out from the NCAA. It was first reported by Yahoo Sports Pete Thamel. The NCAA has okayed the return of football, men's basketball, and women's basketball student athletes to campus during the period of June 1st through the 30th. They're going to discuss other sports and their calendar, their schedule soon. Now, this doesn't mean that all these student athletes are going to return to campus right away. As you alluded to, decisions will be made school to school, city to city, state to state. But John, your thoughts on what feels like a significant step in this process?
It is. And everybody, I think one of the questions I get is, why is it only June 1 to June 30? Well, you know, there's going to have to be an assessment at the end of the month. How did this go? What are we doing? What are the risks that we didn't see coming? And how are we handling it? And then, you know, there'll obviously be an extension of that with maybe some new parameters. But when you think about bringing those student athletes back to campus, and everybody wants to know, well, is it going to be, you know, the starters that come back? Is it the two deep? Most of the coaches, and I have not had a chance to talk to Coach Harbaugh or Ward Manuel since this came out, but the coaches that I have talked to have said, hey, we're going to first bring back those student athletes that are local, right? Those that have stayed in the area or live in the area because we know the environment they're coming from. Then they're going to start importing those that are coming from around the country and possibly around the world and, you know, find out what protocol is in place. If it's 10 people in one spot, then that's usually, you know, at this time of the year, it's going to be a strength and conditioning coach and 9 individuals. How do we get them in? How do we get them worked out? How do we keep them safe? And then how do we proceed from there? And whatever that number is and how many days, what times they're coming in and out. The beautiful thing about Michigan's new weight room that's only about a year and a half old is the fact that it is enormous. And you can spread out. You can do so many things with the team and even the South Athletic Campus. The new facilities that are down there will allow for Michigan student athletes to come back in greater numbers simply because they have the real estate, they have the space to be able to spread out and work out, and they have the facilities, they have the staff to make that possible.
Yes, I think slow and steady wins the race, and I think this is a slow, steady, and understandable next step. And you just have to cross your fingers and hope that everybody involved handles things properly, and I think that'll happen certainly at Michigan. Number four on today's 7 from 77, Jim Harbaugh was on ESPN's Get Up program earlier this week, and he said that if given the choice between not playing and playing with no fans, he'd absolutely play, something that he claimed that pretty much everybody on the team echoes as well. That's not a surprise, but John, we don't know where we'll be come September with this thing, but curious, as someone who has played a lot of football, how do you think a crowdless environment would affect things on the field?
Well, I don't think it affects anything on the field. You know, and maybe there is some of the home field advantage that is lost because if an opposing team is, you know, they're at the goal line coming out and the crowd noise isn't there, then the snap count and you don't have to go silent count. Some of those things will be taken away. But in regards to the outcome of the game, I don't necessarily think that it will have a major effect on it. What it will have an effect on, and there was an article that came out recently by The Athletic talking about, you know, they had talked anonymously to some student athletes about the comfort level of coming back, what it would be like to play in front of, you know, an empty crowd or an empty stadium. And the one thing I thought was interesting was, and they had one of them, what was a wide receiver that had mentioned, hey, if we could delay the start and know that we had fans, I think most of us would like to delay it. And I'm paraphrasing his comments, but I think, and I shared this earlier on a show, and I want to share it with you now. This is a moment because playing at Michigan, whether you're on the football team, the basketball team, the lacrosse team, the softball team, the swim team, it doesn't matter. It is a special time in a student athlete's life. It is a special time in their family's life. And my mom had shared this to me after she listened to the last podcast where we were talking about the 97 season and the 98. And I know she won't mind me sharing this with our Michigan family. She said, I enjoyed listening to In the Trenches today. Your playing years gave us a new dimension in life. Thank you for letting us come along for the journey. The experience isn't just for the player. And so I think when you listen to a lot of the student athletes talk and say, hey, you know, whether it's Jim Harbaugh saying it's okay if we play in front of nobody, they're going to say the same thing. But what they would really like is to, and I did this when I was playing, I would look up and I would see, I would locate where my mom and dad were, my brothers, if they were there. And it gave me a sense of, I don't want to say safety, but of confidence because I knew my family was there and they were enjoying this moment. And families will enjoy, whether it's 3 years, 4 years, 5 years that your student athlete is playing at the University of Michigan, they enjoy and they're as much a part of the experience along the way. So even if we are in a limited number of participants watching the game in the stadium, families of the student athletes have to be a part of that equation because it is such a great opportunity that an individual has, whether it's at Michigan or anywhere across college sports. Those moments are monumental because it is such a privilege to be able to do that.
Wholeheartedly agree. Number five on today's 7 from 77. Been a busy offseason for Michigan basketball. On the men's side, it continues with the Twitter announcement from Sean D. Brown that he's committing to Michigan after transferring from Wake Forest. Hasn't been announced by the program yet, but Wake didn't really have a ton of success in Brown's first three seasons. And to me, having a guy come in who put up good numbers, but he's looking strictly to win. You talked about it on that 97 team, just win. Having a guy who has talent and has an experience winning and has one crack left, I think there's an extra fire in him, don't you?
I do, and come National Signing Day, Michigan missed out on a couple of recruits. They decided to go to the NBA G League or go somewhere else, and you know, then you've got to look, okay, well, I don't necessarily want to fill it with somebody that, you know, next on the list. And sometimes that's good, sometimes it's not. But then you start looking around to the transfer portal and you say, how can I add to this team now in regards to talent, to experience, to, you know, leadership? I think is going to be a big part of this coming season for the basketball team. And when you start to look around at the guys that are in there and the programs that they come from and the fact that, hey, some of these guys, they are extremely motivated to have success immediately because they only have one more season or they only maybe have two more seasons. They've got to make it happen now. So that motivation, adding that to the mix, I think is a plus.
Yeah, and that's from my old neck of the woods and talking to some people who watched a lot of his game. He sounds similar to an Isaiah Livers type in the fact that he can play multiple positions. He's not someone who necessarily can consistently create for himself, but he's a guy who can really finish plays well. I think he's going to be a really intriguing addition. Now, it is not a guarantee that he will be able to play this upcoming season. That is going to have to be a waiver granted to him. But still, whenever he is able to suit up, I think it's a really good addition to this program. Number six, on the baseball side, Eric Backich, Michigan's head coach, along with multiple coaches in the sport, they've created what's called the new baseball model. It's a mission to, as they say, quote, adjust the college baseball model with calendar changes that decrease expenses, increase revenues, improve academic success, and improve student-athlete welfare. The calendar change would basically be to shift the college baseball season back 1 month and have it start the third weekend in March. So if this were to go through 2022, the season would begin March 18th, conference tournaments last week of June, College World Series would be July 15th to the 26th. Now, This has been something that has been discussed in various ways, not this exact specific, in the past. But it's a no-brainer for Michigan and the northern schools to be able to start in the middle of March versus the middle of February, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, and would you think when you look back to the schedule this year, they were going to spend the first 6 weeks basically on the road, whether it's out in California, out in Arizona, down in Florida, in some of the warmer climates so that you can play those games. Well, that's increased cost of travel, of, you know, putting those players up in hotels. And so if you can shift it back, now all of a sudden it becomes a competitive advantage for the northern teams, or at least a competitive equalizer, where instead of spending 6 weeks on the road to start the season, when you're trying to develop your identity as a team, you can have some of those games at home. And I think it helps in recruiting as well. That's been one of the hard things that northern teams have to do, is to try and recruit and say, you know what, hey, come here. And, you know, Eric Backich has done a great job of that. And you could see the results on the field for what he's done in developing his players and the success that he has had. But this will help all of the northern teams to be able to recruit those players and say, you know what, you're not going to have to spend the first 6 weeks on the road. You could play home games here in March and in April, and it's going to help with the expenses, and it's also going to help with eyeballs. The more that you get a chance to play at home, more people are going to come to the games, more opportunity to, you know, to raise. Anytime there is more competition, and if we saw that with Eric Backich and the run that they had last year in the College World Series, now all of a sudden there's eyes on the Big Ten. There's all of a sudden eyes on Michigan. What are they going to do this year? Now, we didn't get to find that out, but once you start having success like that, more of the elite players are going to come to your program, which will create more competition across the country, and it's all better for that sport. More competition, more success across the country means better for the sport, no matter how you look at it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting how the Southern schools will approach this, because understandably they're a little bit less enthused about creating an equal playing field, or a more equal playing field, within college baseball. I do love that you think about Eric Backich doing this. Jim Harbaugh came out with his open letter. Michigan coaches using their platform for more than just, hey, we want to win and graduate student-athletes, trying to make a difference. And, you know, I think it'll be interesting. This is a time in sports where you can make some tweaks. You can make some changes. In the NBA, I think a lot of people are clamoring for them to start Christmas every year, because it's after the NFL for the most part. They can stretch the season into July in every season, as opposed to maybe just this season. It'll be interesting to follow, and college baseball's taking a look at it as well. John, would you rather eat no candy at Halloween or no turkey at Thanksgiving?
No, I'll give up the candy, no problem. I do love my Halloween candy. You can keep candy corn. I don't want that at all. But turkey at Thanksgiving, that would be like cutting off a finger if I wasn't allowed to have turkey at Thanksgiving. Because then what are you just going to – are you going to have a Thanksgiving ham? Or I'd be okay with a Thanksgiving prime rib, but it still wouldn't be the same, because turkey goes with mashed potatoes. It goes with gravy. It goes with stuffing. It goes with cranberry sauce. It goes with pumpkin pie. It brings it all together. And what else would I put in my Thanksgiving smoothie if I didn't have turkey to throw in there?
Bacon?
Well, bacon, that's a no-brainer. That goes in as well, but you've got to have your turkey. So that's an easy one. The Halloween candy at Thanksgiving, I could do without that. That's no problem.
All right, fair enough. Would you rather have to drink all your beverages from a massive bucket or from a baby bottle?
boy, this is not good. What's on top of the baby bottle?
What is it called? Is it not pacifier, but the little sucky thing? I don't think that's the correct term.
This is amazing. Oh, this could go extremely bad. So give me that question again.
Would you rather have to drink all your beverages from a massive bucket or from a baby bottle?
So for the sake of my job, I'm going to say I'll drink it from a bucket.
Yeah, the image of you just, you know, sucking out a baby bottle in public is probably a little interesting.
It's not that I don't like it. It's just that I'm going to have to go with the bucket. Let's move on to the bacon fact, please.
In the spirit of our conversation about microwaving bacon from last time, so I was looking around at, you know, like how you know, what's the best way to do this if you really wanted to try it? And I stumbled across, there are these one, like all-in-one sets of microwaving bacon and eggs where they have a little platform for the bacon and a little slot for the eggs. I thought that's got to be a novelty item. That's got to be something that just, you know, one or two people made. If you search microwave bacon and eggs on Amazon, 496 results come up. And most of them were actually a two-in-one type of a thing, which really made me sad.
Well, it makes me sad. I'm fine with microwaving eggs. You know, you can cook eggs in a lot of different ways, but you just can't microwave bacon. That's just, in my life and in my world, that's a no-no. And it gets you immediately kicked out of the house, you know, at least for breakfast. But microwaving eggs, I'm okay with that, except for the fact that the process of making bacon and eggs is that you make your bacon first. And then you let it cool and harden up just a little bit. You can't, you know, crispy bacon is not my favorite, but I'll eat any kind of bacon. But then you dump your eggs into the bacon grease, and then you make your eggs that way. And if there is any left over, that's how you make your toast. You put your toast in there, and instead of having to butter your toast, you could toast it inside that bacon grease, and it's like a crouton. It's a sponge. It just soaks up all that goodness so that nothing goes to waste. And we're all about conserving our resources right now. You must conserve the resources of breakfast and bacon and eggs.
That is the John Jansen recycling tip of the week, which is great. And that transitions us into Jared Irons.
Jared is, he's a very close friend. He is a two-time captain at the University of Michigan, a consensus All-American. He is an all-around great guy. We're so happy. 2 years ago, he moved back to the state of Michigan, lives down in Detroit. We're going to get a chance to talk to him about what's going on down there right now. But I'm so happy that he is back and around the program more, because when you talk about leaders and best, and whether it's Eric Backich, Jim Harbaugh at this time coming up with things to improve their sport and college athletes, or college athletics, you got to talk about what Jared Irons was and is to the University of Michigan, to the football program, and his legacy. Please enjoy the conversation I had with Jared Irons. I've got another special guest. I think I say that every time, because whether it's Jim Abbott, Jim Harbaugh, Ward Manuel, Brian Greasy, a lot of former teammates, a lot of guys that played for the University of Michigan, especially at this time where we're a little bit limited and there's no spring ball, there's no practice, not a lot going on with Michigan football. I like to take a look back at the history of Michigan football. And everybody I talk to, I think, is a special guest, because they are special to me. But this guy was a former teammate of mine, and we are connected in so many different ways. But one of the guys that I learned how to be a Michigan Wolverine from Jared Irons, two-time captain at the University of Michigan, has joined us today. Jared, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing great, John. Hey, man, that introduction is second to none, dude. I mean, I need to take you with me and be my hype guy.
Hey, I'll go with you wherever you want, man, because you are one of the most successful guys I know, and you keep it rolling. Tell us what you're doing right now, and you know, not necessarily during the virus, but what's your company, what's your profession, what are you up to these days?
Yeah, you know, hey, thanks for asking. You know, I've recently moved to Detroit 2 years ago, but I basically took over. I work in medical device. My company sells knee and hip replacement, and I was a long-time rep in Chicago with my company, and they asked me to move to Michigan to take over the state of Michigan. So I got reps that work on my team, and they're in surgery all the time, helping doctors to get through surgery and doing total knee and total hip replacements. And it's been fun. It's been a good challenge for me, and I've been in this industry for 17 years, so it's been fun.
And it's taken you a lot of different places. I know you just came from Chicago, but the last 17 years, where have you been?
Well, you know, I've been in 17. I've lived in Chicago, and I've worked for this company and just in this industry in general. But I've always, you know, traveled around and recruited and worked and tried to bring new surgeons on in other markets as well. But I've always lived. My base was in Chicago, And so now I still have business in Chicago, and now I've taken over Michigan. So I'm just trying to expand and just try to do good work out here.
Taking over Michigan. You took over Michigan back in 1992.
It's good to be back.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. And so I got to ask you this, because you are in knee and hip replacements, and it instantly hit me when you said that. How many former guys call you up and say, dude, can you help me out?
I get a lot of calls, man. And, you know, but more so for us, for our generation, you know, we have some time. Our joints are probably doing, you know, somewhat well. But, you know, a lot of my parents or guys that play with my dad, a lot of them call, and my parents, you know, hook me up, and they want me to talk to different, you know, some of their friends. They have questions about, you know, what implant, what surgeon, and, you know, should they do it? And it's a great procedure, man. You know, arthritis, one, you know, for our, you know, our bodies, you know, as good as they reproduce and can heal, our bodies don't create, we can't make cartilage. So when you wear out your meniscus in your knee or your, you know, the cartilage in your hip, you know, it's a good alternative. You're going to have to get a replacement and replace that arthritis and put in some new prosthesis that will help you, you know, have a better quality of life.
Yeah, rotate the tires is how I like to describe it. So
exactly.
Get a fresh tread on there. And I think a number of us are heading that direction at some point. But you mentioned that you live down in Detroit, and no place really across the country, save maybe New York, has been hit harder in terms of the percentage of people affected by the coronavirus. And you're right in the middle of it. What are you seeing, and how are things today down in Detroit?
You know, it's interesting. You know, Detroit's been hit heavily. You know, my next door neighbor, you know, they're very well connected and have, you know, friends that have unfortunately have passed from this virus. It seems that Detroit has been hit very, very heavily. But, you know, for us, you know, we've been, you know, quarantined, probably my family and I, for the last 2 months, in the house, and just, you know, when we do go downtown, you know, we make sure we have gloves and a mask and so forth. But what I am seeing when I am out, you see a lot of Detroiters, they are wearing their mask and they're social distancing. So hopefully, those acts will help, you know, curb this disease and make sure this virus that, you know, slow it down some. But, you know, people in Detroit are definitely great. They're hardworking and trying to do the right thing and follow the right protocol. So I think it's getting better. You know, a couple of weeks ago it was skyrocketing, but it seems like it's kind of leveling out, hopefully.
And I know when we talked to set up this conversation, you were working from home. How has it been going working from home? Because I know you got you got a full house.
Oh yeah, you know. Luckily, you know, I can't complain, man. I'm in a great situation. My wife works in medical IT, and she's we've been married 7 years, but we've known each other for 10 years. But as long as we've been together, she's always worked from home. So we've moved to different, you know, places, and she's always worked from home. So she already has a routine. It's me adjusting my routine to understand and work from home. But I have a nice setup here. I have a nice office, and it's been good. I've been getting a lot of work done, so I can't complain. I really do like working from home, but it'd be good to get back in the field and see some of my customers and some of my reps again.
Yeah, and it'll be nice to get back, all of us, to some sense of normalcy. And when we talk about normalcy, it's for us as football players, it's spring football. It's summer conditioning, which is what these guys should be doing right now. Can you imagine being, you know, if you could turn back the clock and put yourself in position of one of these guys right now, trying to prepare for a college football season, what do you think the biggest challenge is for these players to not be able to be at Schembechler Hall, not be able to be with their friends, their teammates, their coaches as they prepare for the season?
Man, it's really, you know, John, I feel so just badly for these players, man, because, you know, that's when you build your teams, man. When you in spring ball and in the summer conditioning, that's when the whole focus and the direction of what we're gonna do next year is. You're putting in the work, you're building the camaraderie, you're seeing who the leaders are gonna be, And I, you know, I take my hat off these guys. I just couldn't imagine having to go through that and prepare, you know, kind of pretty much by yourself, you know. And, you know, my question would be, and I'd ask you, like, how do these guys keep that intensity up to be able to push themselves to get to the level that what it takes? We understand, you and I, from playing, you know, at the Big House and going through Michigan, but say for a young guy coming in as a freshman, you know, what do you think about getting ready? You know, just what do you expect? You know, it's just hard.
It is. And when, gosh, when you think about those young guys coming in, like one of the, in the acclimation process of becoming a college football player, when you get there, we all think like we're studs, right? And we're going to rewrite the book of football. But you quickly learn that how you worked out before, while it worked in high school, it's a completely different level at the college level. And it takes another step up when you go to the next level, which is the NFL. But you've got to learn how to work out. And if you aren't able to do that with the upperclassmen showing you how to do it and what it takes to be successful, I think that that growth of that young class is going to be a little bit stunted. But and to your point, in terms of the intensity, all of these kids are, they're working out. They're all doing everything they can because there's a lot of pressure. Hey, there's a job on the line, you know, a position on the line. I want to play. But when you're, and you know this, and you and I were a part of this together where, hey, Mike Gittleson says, hand on the line, linebackers, you've got to run this gasser in under 17 seconds. O-line, you got to run it in under 19. I don't care if I'm running against offensive linemen or linebackers, I'm going to push myself to try and beat those linebackers in that time. You don't get that when you're not working out together. So it's so hard.
I mean, you know, but on the flip side, you know, I see, you know, that's so hard to keep that intensity up. And I think the camaraderie and the competition, but on the other side of it, you gotta look, you know, if we were going to go through a pandemic and guys weren't going to go through spring ball and then you're not going through summer conditioning, I guess if you had to look at the positive side, if I was going to have to go through that, I'm glad that, you know, these guys are going through it during this time with the amount of technology we have now. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if this happened, you know, when we were playing, you know, technology wasn't to the degree that it is now where, you know, where we can, you know, study film so well on our phones, you know, with the whole how huddle and how you can mentally get better. You know, I think as far as conditioning and so forth, I think, you know, you can get, you know, once they get into camp and so forth, they'll get the condition. You got to be in some sort of shape, but getting those mental reps, getting the studying of the true studying of the game, you know, I think, you know, for the guys that are already at Michigan, I think that adjustment will be a little easier for them because they have a point of reference because they've been there. You know what I mean? And they can kind of build on that. But like for a young, you know, freshman coming in, that's going to be really difficult.
Well, and I've asked some guys this, and I think you're going to be a great guy to ask this question to. Last one I asked it to was Josh Gattis, and he hit it out of the park. But, you know, you can be in great shape, and I call it track shape. You know, whether it's summer conditioning, winter conditioning, you're running, you're lifting, you're doing all that. And, you know, we all like to, you know, like Mike Gittleson used to do, hey, we'd take that picture right before training camp with our shirts off, right? just to make us feel good. And you know, we look good at the time, but there's a difference. Once you put the pads on, you put the helmet on, you think you're in great shape, you go out and practice. Talk about the difference between being in basically track shape and football shape.
Man, there's a total difference, man. I mean, there is, you know, it's so funny. I remember my freshman year coming in, you know, I was like 213 and, you know, growing up in Texas and running and getting in shape in Texas. I mean, you know, when I got to Michigan and we did the Michigan Mile, I mean, I came in like fourth. I mean, I could run because I was just training in Houston area. So it's so hot and it was just, you know, I was in great shape. But once we put the pads on, it was a whole different ball game, and I felt like I was gassing, you know what I mean? Because it's a whole different, you know, mindset that your body is different, you know, having to carry those pads and hit. football shape is truly different than track shape. I have to agree with you on that.
It is. You put that face mask on and all of a sudden you're like, I can't breathe.
Mm-hmm. I know.
But
yes, I remember that.
Hey, back in, what was it, 1996, right? You mm-hmm. are a junior, 1995, right? It's your junior year, and you are the fifth player in the history of the University of Michigan to be named captain as a junior. What was that mm-hmm. like for you?
Man, I tell you what, Jansen, and it's funny that, you know, you're asking me that question because, you know, playing in Michigan is such a great honor, and it's one of the best things that I've ever done in my life, and it's gone with me all my life, and I love and the being back in Michigan just means so much to me, you know, and after being in that program, but more importantly, on top of that, being elected captain by your peers is the greatest honor that you could ever have, and to be elected twice, you know, being voted by your peers. Meaning, like, just like you, and I got to take my hat off to you, Jansen. I mean, you know, there's not many of us that can say they had that honor at the prestigious school, University of Michigan. And to have a two-time captain, me, you and I talking about it, we understand what that means and what that takes. And you got to think about it. Our junior year, what that means is, you know, Michigan's always been a senior-led team. That means that fifth-year seniors had to vote for us to be captain. Mm-hmm. What an honor. What an honor that a fifth year senior would want a junior to lead them. And so that's something that I've always just, it's been a great honor, and I wear it with pride, and I love it. And I love every time I see you and talk to you, because that's that bond we will always have. You know, it's just such a great honor.
It is. And I know that, you know, you're a guy that played a position where you had stats, right? And so you can throw that captainship in with some of those, you know, stats and the honors and you know, obviously Jared Irons, when he retired or moved on from the University of Michigan, he was at 296 career tackles, first highest number in the history of the University of Michigan. So you've got a number of things where it's been, you know, it's such a storied history, but the Irons name has been stamped on it and will be stamped on it forever. When you look back at your time, whether it's, you know, leading the team in tackles and having more than anybody in the history of the University of Michigan, being a two-time captain, you know, what do you think your legacy, what was it that you wanted to leave at Michigan when you graduated?
You know, that's a great question. You know, for me growing up, I was blessed to have a family, my family dynamic growing up in Texas, having a dad that, you know, played 10 years in the NFL and you know, is a great business leader and has done well and, you know, got his MBA while he was, you know, playing in the NFL at University of Chicago and got his law degree while he was playing for John Madden. And you know, having that example for me, you know, for me, it just, I always knew when I got to Michigan that, you know, my goal was, I knew that I was probably going to redshirt, but I wanted to graduate in 4 years and I wanted to start my master's my fifth year. So the fact that Mo, you know, wrote that into my scholarship, Mo and Cam wrote that in, and I was able to graduate, you know, in 4 years, like I said, and start my master's. That is probably one of the things that I look back on that, you know, when people ask the things that, you know, how do I want to be remembered? I wanted to be remembered as a true student athlete, mm-hmm. and someone that gave his all, but understood that, look, as much as I love this sport and love football, I'm more than just a football player, you know, and that's something my dad has always instilled. My mom and dad both have always instilled in me that, you know, life is more than just what you do on that field. And you use, you know, football is a great avenue to help you get to that next level, but it's more than just that. And so if anything for me, I just hope that my legacy is someone that, you know, when people look at my name and what I've done, is someone that always gave his all, but someone that understood the value what football can bring, but that it's more than just what we do on the field. It's about impacting people's lives off the field. And that's something that I've always tried to do. And I think that's what's kind of why I've
you know, been in, you know, position. Every time I've been in, you know, whether it's sports or in business, I've always been asked to lead. And I think that's the reason being is because, you know, thinking about the greater good, the team. And, you know, my dad, you know, the one quote that I always think about that, you know, that my dad talked about how Al Davis, you know, who used to, you know, obviously own the Raiders and mm-hmm. during the whole Raiders, you know, nation and so forth. But he'd always tell us stories about how, you know, he and John Madden would always talk about, you know, everybody talks about the different accolades and who gets this on a team and everybody wants their name on, in the paper and they want their name in the lights. And Madden and the whole Raider Nation and Al Davis, their mindset was like, look, when you win, there's enough for everybody. Mm. And that's always been my mentality. I never really cared about, you know, how many tackles I made or having, you know, being all American or all that. My goal was to win. And if we won and if we did it the right way, then we all get the accolades. You know, you think about it with you leading, you know, leading the national championship team. You know, you think about all the accolades after you guys won, all the different opportunities that came from all those players, you know, the opportunities that came because of that. And it was because winning, you know, when you win, there's enough for everybody. And that's something that I do believe.
I do too. And I tell players that now, I tell kids that, hey, that moment, that 97 team, people are probably tired of hearing me talk about it, but it was such a big moment in the history of Michigan football and in my life. All, you know, and I don't remember how many guys were on that team exactly, but say there were, you know, 115, 120 guys from, mm-hmm. you know, the guy that got the most accolades, we'll put him at the top of the list and we'll say that's Charles Woodson because he won the Heisman right. Trophy, all the way down to guy 120, their life was forever changed
forever
by that moment.
Changed.
And you look back on it and people want to talk to you about it. They want to know what it was like to be teammates with, you know, Charles Woodson, Brian Greasy. At the time, you know, Tom was a backup quarterback. It's hard to even imagine right now, but that's the depth of talent we had there. And it was just, you know, nobody cared who made the interception, who scored the touchdown. It was all about the win. And it just has affected our lives so much from that point. And I before I talk, and I get fired up when I talk to Jared Irons because he played the game with the same passion that I tried to emulate. And when you say it's a senior-led team, and that's when you have the best teams, is when it's a senior or a veteran-led team. Guys that have been around, they know how to play, they know how to go out there and prepare, but there was a certain intensity that Jared Irons played with, and there's a couple of questions I'm going to get to, and I promise you that it is going to get wild and crazy here in just a minute. But for those kids that are now going to college, whether it's at Michigan or anywhere else, when, because there's a lot of kids that do end up listening to this podcast, there's a lot of parents that listen to it, what's the value of that degree that you just talked about that you wanted to get? You wanted to graduate by your fourth year and start graduate school and get your master's by your fifth year. What has been the value of that degree to you?
I'm going to tell you, it's been, you know, it's so funny. I remember vividly, you know, playing in Texas in high school football. You got to think about it. My high school, we played in front of 15,000 people every game, every Friday night. And every year from my two brothers, that we all went to the same high school. So every year we always had like 11 to 12 D1, you know, scholarship players. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm saying that to say that, you know, I had many opportunities when I came out of high school to go anywhere I wanted to go. And Michigan, reason why I chose Michigan is because of the academic prowess of our university, the tradition, and what that degree means. You know, it's funny. I was in Japan years ago, and I met so many people that went to U of M that were living in Japan. I mean, no matter where you go around this world, everybody knows Michigan and they know that degree. And you know, it's funny for me. I've been working for a long time now, but been out of school, but there's never been, you know, a job I've had or a people that I've worked on that Michigan didn't play a part. Mm-hmm. You know, Michigan maybe didn't open it. Michigan opened a door or gate. You know, it's just a different respect level with you when you go to the University of Michigan and what that degree means. And so for me, you know, the school, you know, when I was looking at schools, and that was something that really set out to me. And I guess for kids that you know that listen to this podcast, I mean, listen, you know, there's a lot of great football, you know, at all these different schools you can go to, but you know, you can always get that, and all of us are on television. But you know, that degree and getting that degree, you want to go somewhere that a degree is going to help you in the long run, and you put in all that hard work. And so for me, Michigan has always been dear to me because yes, it was great playing and being on the field and going through the program. But that degree from Michigan, with the two degrees I have from Michigan, have just always, you know, been something that I've just, you know, been so proud of. But it's helped me tremendously. Because you got to be understand, like, you know, I grew up in a family where, yeah, my dad played 10 years in the league. But the whole time, you know, my dad, when we were in California, we were driving back. My dad at the time, my mom and dad are from Gary, Indiana. So they grew up, you know, steel mill country, you know, didn't have much. But my dad, you know, knew that, you know, in the off season, you know, when my dad got drafted third round, and what happened was his older brother, my dad's younger than seven. So his older brother, after he got drafted, they're having a draft party and asked my dad, you know, at the draft party, you know, what are you going to do now? And my dad was like, well, I just got drafted to the Raiders. I'm going to go play football. He's like, no, you're actually, and at the time, my uncle was, getting his MBA from the University of Chicago. And so he's like, actually, what you're going to do in the offseason here, you're going to enroll and get your MBA with me. And that's what my dad did, you know, because my uncle was always saying that, look, listen, you have to have a life after sports. You know, you can only play this game so long. John, as great as you were as a player, and as great as I was, I mean, you had a great illustrious NFL career, but you've only do it for so long. Mm-hmm. So having the opportunities, you know, for me, were just to make sure I had opportunities outside of when I was done playing. That's always been my main focus. I went to Michigan. I never, you know, to me, playing in the NFL was a bonus, mm-hmm. but it was never a goal of mine to play in the NFL. You know, it was like, yeah, you know, if I make it, it'd be great. But, you know, for me, it was always to graduate, be the best college football player I could be, and, you know, try to get two degrees from there and then, you know, go on from there, you know. I never really saw myself as a guy that was going to, you know, play 10 years like my dad played. You know, I just never thought like that. And it just, I'm not saying that anything against that. That was never something I thought of, you know. Mm-hmm. And that degree at Michigan means the world to me.
So, okay, now that we've covered all the bases, I want to get a little wild and crazy. And I do not jump the shark on me, all right? Because I want to build this up a little bit. So in 1993, it is the mm-hmm. first year that Penn State is welcomed into the Big Ten. You were a part of the Michigan football team, a part of the Big Ten when that happened. What were you thinking when the Big Ten said, hey, Penn State, come on in and be a part of us? Let's get to 11.
Man, it was an exciting time, man. It really was. And you know, like for us, you know, being captain and when they do the kickoff in Chicago and they bring the captains, you know, the mm-hmm. kickoff weekend and so forth. And I remember sitting down and talking to Joe Pa, you know, but you know, that year when they were coming in the Big Ten, and you know, he recruited me from Texas, so you know, I've already had a relationship with him, and it was just, you know, the whole stigma of them coming in, and they, you know, it was interesting because they wrote in their contract that they would get a bye week before the Michigan game and before Ohio State, and we just felt like that was just so wrong. Why would they get that? You know what I mean? And so the emphasis on that game was so high, and they wanted us. We had to play there, mm-hmm. and I'm gonna tell you, man, that's one of the best stadiums to play in. I mean, the grass at that time was like playing on a golf course, and when they do the whiteout, man, it's just. I mean, in the when the crowd's going, it was unbelievable. But that goal line stands.
Whoa. We're only talking about Penn State coming into the Big Ten.
I'm sorry. I get worked up, man. I'm telling you. I get worked. There's a picture in my office right now. I'm looking at me tackling Kajana Carter in that game.
Uh-huh.
And
so
I look at it every day.
So, all right, you got me where I'm going, all right, because I'm getting excited too. So let's lay it on the line right here. Okay, Michigan is up 14-10. We already know that Penn State, they thought coming into the Big Ten that they were just going to roll over the Big Ten and be Big Ten champs. They wanted the bye week before. They wanted to play at home the first time. There was great lead up to this game. Michigan is ahead 14-10. Penn State goes on a 79-yard drive. They get down inside the 5-yard line. Kerry Collins, the quarterback for Penn State, sneaks it a couple of times and is stopped by the Michigan front. Then all of a sudden, they decide that they're going to hand the ball off to Kajana Carter, and he is taken down. So we get to fourth down, and this is what leads up to the greatest goal line stand in the history of the Michigan football program. Jared Irons takes on Brian O'Neill, who is the fullback of the Penn State Nittany Lions, sheds Brian O'Neill, and there is Kajana Carter. He meets Jared Irons head-to-head. Jared Irons wins the matchup. The greatest goal line stand is taken. Michigan wins the game 21-13. Tell us what it was like at that moment to have all of that pressure leading up to that goal line stand, and you guys come away without bending, without breaking, without doing anything other than exerting the dominance of Michigan football.
Jansen, I tell you what, buddy, I'm about to jump outside my chest right now, dude. What you said,
let's go, man.
I'm like, wow, dude. You painted that picture, man. It was intense, and you gotta think about it, man. You think about it. You've seen defenses after you go on a long drive as an offense, and you see how tired they are. And you know when they got us down there, man. They had gone so long, and it was a hard fought game. We were gassing some, man, and it took everything in us. It was that pride. It was that goal line stand. You know, and that one thing about Michigan, you know, the tradition of us is like, give me a place to stand. That's for defense. All we need, if it's an inch, we just need one place to stand where we can put the ball. Give me a place, and we will hold it. And to a man, all 11 of us, we just believed. We believed that we were going to stop them. We just knew it. And we, you know, everyone, you know, you look at the four plays, man, everyone executed their assignments to a T. You got to think about it, that last play of Kajana Carter,
mm-hmm.
man, the way we had stunted our defenses, we had stunted them going inside and, you know, to where, you know, the stunts were coming inside. So it was hopefully to make the ball bounce out. And so on that last play, so they were used to that. So on that last play, we had all our D line angle out. And it opened up the middle, and basically we called it oranges. It was a stunt, and where the linebackers, where the D linemen, they veer out and they open up the A gap pretty much, and the linebackers have to step up. And if you don't make that play, it's over. You know what I mean? It's like a you know, all out pretty much. It's on us. You know, it's on the linebackers to make that play. And I knew when coach called that play, when oranges, I knew like. It's got to be us. We got to, you know, I got to step in. It's just what it is. And there was a lot of pressure. And obviously, Kajana was such a great player. But, man, when we stopped him, I felt like, man, I just felt invincible, man. It was a feeling that, man, it was all of us that collectively, we played that series to a T. Those four plays, it was perfect. And, man, I'm just thinking about it. I'm over here sweating, dude.
Me too. I had to stand up for a couple minutes there and got my heart beating. It's so much fun to talk about that play, and because it really is true, because there was so much buildup to Penn State coming in the Big Ten. There was so much talk about it, and there was so much confidence on the other sideline that they really thought that they were just going to come in the Big Ten and roll over everybody. And
we felt, I'm not to cut you off, but we felt as well, like, you know, we had pride in this in the sense that, you know, we have to win this game. because it sets a bad precedent for them to come in the Big Ten. And we've been leaders, you know, of the Big Ten for so long and get beat, you know what I mean? And so it was just like, that's why we were sweating, because I remember the pressure back, you know, and just studying for that game and what that game meant, not only to us as Michigan, but what it meant to the Big Ten. You know, and that was a lot of pressure, man. We had to win that game.
Mm-hmm. Well, you guys did. And then I want to fast forward to your junior and senior year, where, you know, you were the captain, two-time captain. And then in 95, Ohio State, you know, they come to Michigan Stadium and they think that they're the greatest thing since sliced bread. They're talking about how great they are and they're undefeated. It's just a formality before they go on to a national championship game. They come into Michigan Stadium and they lose. But you got to play against a guy named Eddie George, who ended up winning the Heisman that year. What was mm-hmm. that game like, and what memories do you have from that game?
Man, that was a hard-fought game as well, but you know, that 95 game with, you know, I'll be honest with you, like, you know, you look at the teams and the rosters of players that are on both teams. I mean, there was so much talent in that game, and what I remember mostly about it is just, you know, I've never really been in a game where I become a fan. You know, obviously we're in the trenches of working hard, this and that, but it got to a point where Tim was running the ball. Biaka was running the ball so well. It became like, I got to see what's going on. This dude was killing those guys. Those holes were so big. I just never seen a line dominate like that. I mean, you know, it was a hard-fought game on defense for us, but, man, nothing like – it was amazing how our offensive line just showing, you know – and I, you know, for me, it was like, it made sense because we go against you guys every week. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, it's not surprising. Like, yeah, of course. But just to show that sure dominance against them, man, was amazing, man. That was a highlight for me. That was just to watch them, you know, just scramble like that and just get pounded. It was great.
In 96, it was much the same story, but we obviously had to go down to Columbus. And mm-hmm. that was a game where, you know, we were able to run the ball a little bit. And in the fourth quarter, we were able to salt it away with some runs. But that game is a low-scoring battle. It was a defensive battle. And obviously, you're the captain of the defense. What was it like going down to Columbus and coming away and being able to walk away? And I think I want you to describe to how loud the silence is when you win down in Columbus.
Man, I'm gonna tell you, man. I think about that game a lot because, you know, you think that we've seen, you know, just obviously the last, you know, years of how the rivalry has been, but that game was I'll never forget that game because that season I had gotten hurt earlier in the season, so you know I was you know I had a you know bad turf toe and a messed up ankle, so I wasn't 100%, and going in that game, and I had struggled in a couple games before. But that game, I was able to really get it together. I think I was Chevrolet player of the game that game, and made a ton of tackles. But what I remember so much about it was just how loud it was. I mean, it was so loud. We could, you know, we're standing next to each other. You can't hear anything. Mm-hmm. And that horseshoe was just so loud. And it's funny because I've always been good friends with Eddie and Orlando Pace and Sean Springs and dad and my dad played together. So we've known each other for years. And we used to talk about that game and, you know, and also like going to, you know, going to the different All-American, you know, events that, you know, you go to. So we'd all, you know, room together and talk. So they'd always talk about like how, you know, Cooper would just, you know, lose it when he was playing against us, you know, we'd all be worked up. They'd have a great game plan going into the game, and they would see what we were doing in warmups, and Cooper would come all nervous back of the, you know, in the locker room and try to change the whole plan of what they practiced all week. So it just a lot was building up in that game and how loud it was, and it was such a hard fought game. And for me as a linebacker, man, going against Orlando Pace, and I mean, he and Runyon, you know, some of the toughest tackles I've ever played against, and And obviously you, Jansen, you just a beast. But nonetheless.
Appreciate you throwing me in there.
Nonetheless, I got to throw you in there, dude. But that game, man, you know, was so hard fought. And just playing in that stadium, and there's so much hatred between us, between the both programs, mm-hmm. that like, but to me, that's the funnest place to play. Mm-hmm. I want to play in the Horseshoe all the time because I love how high, it's a hostile environment. And in the beginning, it's so loud you can't hear. But when you shut them up, it gets so silent in there. Uh-huh. I mean, it's like you can hear a pin drop. I mean, it's like, and it's like if you're able to ever have that in your career. And have it to where you can shut it down in the Horseshoe, man. It's a great experience, and it's something I will always remember.
And next time, I know that you and Sean Springs are good friends. Does he give you the same excuse that when Ty Streets caught that post route and went for a touchdown? That I slipped.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it. Come on, Sean.
Come on, man. Like Ty was running on the same grass. He didn't slip.
Yeah, exactly, dude. Exactly. No, he didn't. But man, that was a fun game, man. I mean, but think about it, man. To you know, do what we did in '95 and pound them like that, and then go on the road in the Horseshoe the next year and win that game like that. I mean, those 2 years, man. It was just a great feeling. I mean, it's been. I hope, you know, I pray that we get that feeling going again, and I feel that we will. You know, I think Jim's gonna get this team right, and I've seen a couple of different headlines. I've heard him talk about it recently. You know, the emphasis is there, so you know, hopefully we can get it together.
We will, and I know that it's coming soon, but we're happy that you're back close. We enjoy seeing you every time we get a chance to see you in Ann Arbor, and I know the fans are gonna love hearing from you, so I really appreciate your time today, and look forward to talking to you again soon, man. Go Blue.
Hey, anytime for you, anything for you, Jansen, man. Go Blue, and to my fellow 2-time U of M captain. There's only a few of us, buddy. We got to stick together. Anytime you ask me, I'm always come on.
I appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Love you, bud. Talk to you later, bud.
Well, as always, I want to say thanks to Jared Irons for giving up a portion of his day. He's a busy, busy man, and for sharing his experiences at Michigan. And before we go, I got to share this with you. I obviously, you heard in the conversation that I was very excited about the goal line stand against Penn State in 1993. But I get as excited when I hear guys like him who can verbalize and talk about how important it was to get that degree from the University of Michigan, what it has meant and how it has opened doors for him. That is such an unbelievable experience. And it's not just student athletes that have that. It's every student at the University of Michigan. That's why we have the greatest alumni and the largest alumni group in the world. They are there because they know when you go to the University of Michigan and you have that diploma that says you graduated from the University of Michigan, it means something. It carries weight. It opens doors. So that excites me just as much. But thanks to him, thanks to you as a listener for tuning into the podcast. Make sure you like, subscribe, download, and leave us your review. Let us know what you like, what you don't like. We'll make sure that we get to anything. And as well, I really enjoyed that last episode where we answered questions. You can always send me questions at JohnJansen77, and we'll do as best we can to get to all of those here on In the Trenches.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of In the Trenches with John Jansen. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.